What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. We are here live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk, of course, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big Wednesday show, as always. We'll do the crossover in a few minutes here with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. Jason Buchla joins us at 1. We'll do the whiteboard a little bit later, but is it panic time, Drance? Is it panic time?
No. Fundamentally, it's not, but...
It's not panic time.
It's not panic
time. It's concern time. It's definitely concern time.
Provided that you do the thing that I always do and specify that it's a lowercase c, as if that matters to anybody. Like, it's a mid-sentence concern. It's not a front of
I'm
sentence.
Not leading the sentence off with concern. Which I don't even know how that sentence construction would work, but...
So, I'd say this. Like, the Canucks aren't playing great hockey right now. Shocker.
Yes, okay.
Right? Not exactly revelatory.
This is why
analysis.
You come to Canucks Talk, for big, bold takes like that.
The Canucks aren't playing good hockey right now. I don't love when you show up, and look, we talked about what the environment in Tampa Bay was going to be like why this was going to be a hard game.
Yep.
For reasons outside of just that the Lightning are still a very good team, right? The energy that the Tampa Bay Lightning had in the first period swamped the Canucks. Like, the Canucks didn't start on time by any means. And truthfully, I think it's fair to say we're outcompeted for much of the game. You know, they found their push. Mm-hmm. The Lightning had to survive a bit of a push from the Canucks in the second period. I thought the Canucks played their five best minutes right before Braden Point sort of twisted the knife with what stood up as the game winner. The Canucks probably deserved a little better coming out of the second period, but the game also should have been over after the first. Like, you know, the Canucks probably deserved a couple in the second, but the Lightning probably deserved three or four in the first. So, and by the way, that would have been good for the over. Anyway, so, you know, it's tough. Like, you just kind of look at that game and think, unlike the Flames game and the Philadelphia game at home, like, that was a game where the Canucks actually looked outclassed, mm-hmm. where the Canucks actually were outcompeted. And so I think that does put a different spin on the concern question, but I don't think we should, you know, I think we have to be careful about overreacting too. Like, it's a dog of a game on the heels of two narrow losses in which the club blew leads, but at least had moments. You know, yep. the game yesterday, it's not like all three of their games have looked like that. If they had, then maybe we'd be having a different concern conversation. I will say this, like, you know, Florida's not lacking Barkov and Tkachuk. The Panthers aren't the back-to-back Stanley Cup finalist Panthers, perhaps, or won't be when the Canucks face them on Thursday, but Sam Reinhart's pretty good.
I was going to say, they've still got Sam Reinhart.
Sam Bennett's pretty good.
Carter Verhaeghe.
Lindell.
Gustav, like, Forsling. It's not like they're pushovers all of a sudden,
no,
right?
And they started Spencer Knight last night. They're going to have Bobrovsky in net. I mean, that's by no means a game that the Canucks should win, even if they are favored in it. You know, and then Philly again, which is a tough matchup. So I think the concern at this point isn't, are the Canucks not what we thought they were? Like, to me, that concern is still a no. But I do think we're at least within spitting distance of sort of the Canucks have reached a moment where their next couple games should be played with a little bit of urgency here, because you can't let this snowball.
Well, it's to the point now where it's like a thing, right? And it's like, okay, when are they going to get the monkey off their back? When are they going to break the goose egg in the win column and actually get their first win of the season? And that's just not a good place to be in. You want to avoid that. That's why you want to win one of your first couple of games. You don't want that to be a big talking point dragging on into your season. But we'll see tomorrow if the Canucks are able to do that.
I know we're going to let the crossover boys in just a minute, as we should, but I do just want to note, like, the Canucks are still -250 to make the playoffs, mm-hmm. At the sports book, so that's a 70% probability. They were obviously higher before these three games, but the fact remains that, you know, the money markets themselves are not looking at this team as one to bet against just yet.
All right. I think we've given Rick enough time to get his fruit consumption in for the day. So let's go right to it here. It's time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly, which you can check out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. And they join us every Wednesday here for the crossover. Rick, do you have a fruit update for us? How many oranges are we talking about today?
Yeah, before the show, we had a tape segment. So during the tape segment, during the show, I ate all my fruit.
Smart.
So I got my three small oranges and two small bananas in. So I won't be hacking and coughing during this segment.
We'll see.
I'm glad to hear it, and I'm glad to know your vitamin C levels are unimpeachable, Rick. That's fantastic.
Where do you find all this miniature fruit?
Like, Thomas, have you heard of Save-On Foods? Are you, like, that dense?
But
like, go to Save-On.
Was that a plantain?
Donnie, they got this little bag with all these small oranges in it, and...
What about the banana, though?
Yeah,
the small bananas.
No, I like... I eat two bananas per day for potassium. But Thomas, how do you not know there are small oranges in the Lower Mainland?
I think he's talking about the bananas.
I know the small oranges, Rick, but the small bananas, as Donnie said, like plantains is what I think of.
It's the you specified across it. It's like, just to make sure you guys know, they were little itty bitty pieces of fruit, little itty bitty bananas, the smallest oranges in the Lower Mainland, thanks to Daryl.
I don't have a choice with bananas or whatever ones are in there. I grab them. I like the long ones. I like the big ones, but I don't like, you know,
okay.
Stop. But when I went there, they just had the small ones. So I grabbed the small ones.
Yeah, you should be used to that.
Fair enough. All right. Glad we got all that out of the way here. Because
you should be used to that.
Boy, do we. Yeah, that's why he's a Hall of Famer right there. We got a lot to get into.
Donnie. We
got a lot to get into with the Canucks here. All right, so guys, panic. Is it time to panic? Three games, no wins. First regulation loss. They lose 4-1 to Tampa last night. Is it panic time for the Canucks and their fans right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes and no. You look at the way some of the individuals are performing, in particular Elias Pettersson. But I was just thinking, watching that game last night, that, okay, they've got 2 points out of their first three games. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, they've lost three games. Maybe Calgary's not all that bad, given, you know, what we've seen, you know, their 4-0 start. And then I'm watching the game last night. Say what you want about Philadelphia. Tampa Bay, Vasilevskiy had the health problems last year.
Yep.
Statistically, the worst season of his career, save percentage, goals against average wise. They're still a pretty good hockey team. And I don't know if the window's still open at all for them, but they looked really good last night. I know they haven't been perfect to start the season, but they looked pretty good last night. So not time to panic, but you certainly wouldn't know it looking at our emails and texts. I'll tell you that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm selling on the games, Flames, guys, by the way. The Flames are who we think they are. It's just been a nice week. Sorry, go on, Rick.
No, but you think the Flames will fall fast here?
Flame out.
Oh, yeah. Flame out in a major way.
Yeah.
Happy for them, though.
No, with the Canucks, guys, three games, they're incorporating a ton of new guys in the lineup. My biggest concern is the free agent signings, like Sprong. You know, is already a healthy scratch. Desharnais is already a healthy scratch back-to-back. Juulsen last night plays 12 minutes, and that means that Quinn Hughes, when you don't trust your third pair, that means your first pair's minutes are going to go up, and here we go, right? Quinn Hughes, 2 games ago, 30 minutes. Quinn Hughes last night, 26 minutes plus, and I'm a little concerned about all these guys they signed in July, already healthy scratches, and now you got Brännström called up, Attu Ratu's gone down. There's some concern. I don't know about you guys.
We haven't even mentioned Heinen and DeBrusk.
DeBrusk and Heinen off to slow starts, too.
Yeah, are they being brought down by the guys playing center? I don't know. Is that a thought?
Well, absolutely. It could be an option there as well.
I think it's reasonable to say that at the end of the day, you're not signing Danton Heinen to help make Pettersson or JT Miller be more than they are, right? You're bringing Danton Heinen in because you think he's at a high enough level that those centermen can elevate him. And I do think it's fair to note that through three games, Vancouver's best players, I know the conversation's mostly been about number 40 or number 11.6, as Donnie would have it, but
you know, I think across the board, Vancouver's core hasn't stood up as the reason why they've won a game through three games. By the way, I'm confident they will more nights than not over the course of the season. So I'm not even saying this to be negative. It's something that you expect to bounce back. I just think we can talk about growing pains and, you know, the fit of some of the new free agents and the speed on the back end and the goaltending all we want. But, like, fundamentally in this league, like, why did the Lightning win last night? Kucherov and Point were the best players on the ice. Like, you know, more nights than not, that's what determines it.
Well, who's been the Canucks' best player so far? I know it's very early, three
Garland.
Guys.
Connor Garland. Yeah.
Whether Garland. It's rightly or wrongly, not a top six player. And I tweeted this out last night. If every player in the Canucks was as noticeable as him, as worked as hard as him, I don't think they'd have many, many problems. But that isn't the case right now. And, you know, Miller was very good. I mean, they lost the first game, but yeah, had the Gordie Howe hat trick, very noticeable. But there've been giveaways, and it's not just Pettersson that's the problem in the top six right now.
Yeah, and even Quinn Hughes. I mean, he's been good, but I don't think he's been at the level we got used to seeing him last year. Right, to start the season here through three games, I'd say he's probably been their second best player after Connor Garland. But we're used to seeing him be a lot better than that. But as you were saying, like, the conversation, we can find flaws in what Miller's done. I think that's fair. Find a little bit of flaws in what Quinn Hughes has done. But obviously, this is stretching back to after the All-Star break for Elias Pettersson, right? So this is not just three games. This is a long time now. And, you know, Drance and I were going through it in the show yesterday, and you look at the list of people who have scored as much as he has at such a young age. Pretty much all of those guys go on to be very, very good NHL players. So it's kind of baffling just how unique this situation is. I keep watching, waiting for him to break out, waiting to see the old Elias Pettersson. But, man, it's been a long time since we've seen that version of the player now.
Yeah, and I think what's really scary is when, like people like yourselves, like Rick and myself, who watch a lot of hockey, and you see these moments where it's like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. And there was one of those moments last night. I know they were shorthanded. Maybe that plays into it, where he had a chance to drive to the net, and he just flicked a shot that was such a softball. I don't know if you guys remember it, at one of the best goaltenders in the world. It was an easy save, and I just think to myself, like, man, aren't you angry enough to just drive the net and do something there? And then there was that moment, I believe, in the Philadelphia game. It's getting a lot of play. Where he was in the corner on a power play and he fell three times in 10 or 15 seconds. And it was really, really hard to watch. And I just got to think there's got to be something wrong with him physically. And I know he's talked about the tendonitis. And if that's the case, then maybe it makes more sense. But, man, there's just these moments where you go, that's just not right. It doesn't look right. It doesn't look like the same guy.
Well, and for me, it's this. You can look at Pettersson two ways. It's only three games, calm down. Or is this a continuation of last year? What's more concerning to me is when Tocchet last week said he's got to be better in three-on-three battles and win more battles in practice. That was one. And I don't think they forced him to work with the Sedins before and after practice, but he did. It was kind of like, we got a plan to get him going. Yeah. Just be a difference maker. The worst place in the world to be with a bad contract, a big contract, and underperform is a hot Canadian hockey market. And, you know, that's just the worst.
I'd love that problem, by the way.
That what?
I'd love to have be paid $11.6 a year in a hot Canadian market.
No, Donnie, it's not fun. You heard him last year.
It's not?
Okay, I'll tell you why. You heard him last year before he signed his contract, the Carolina rumor. He said the noise, outside noise, was getting to me, right? The contract, the pressure, all that stuff. These guys, Donnie, if you think these guys don't read Canucks Twitter or monitor the media on their cell phones, you're out to lunch. They know everything.
And do you not think that 99.9% of the population would trade places with them?
99% of the population doesn't have public jobs. You and I do, sort of the two guys we're talking to. It's a whole different ball of wax. We get criticized. Every day, Dollywell's an idiot.
And you deal with that. Yeah. You're not making anywhere near. Well, I think you're making, you know, close to it, but, you know,
not in the
not
ballpark.
As Elias Pettersson. Well, that's the way he can afford plantains.
But they're humans. And we get called. Dollywell's an idiot. Taylor's an idiot. Drance gets it a lot. Drance is an idiot. We get that. We see it.
I do get it a lot. You're right.
Jamie gets it too. Don't
Dodd gets it too.
I get it.
I know
don't
people
worry.
Who call Dodd an idiot. But we get it. Humans are geared to have a pat on the back, not to be ripped. We have public jobs. It's true, though. And if you think that he doesn't read it or see it, you're out to lunch, so, Thomas. You really are.
But the best people fight
through that. I do believe
that
they see it.
Okay, well,
but I think you're right,
Thomas.
So, Rick, I think you're right about that playing a role, and I'm sympathetic to it. Like, I'm sympathetic to the point you're making, but at a certain point, the only way to stop that noise is for him to go out there and perform, right? Like, the noise isn't going to go away itself. And in fact, it's going to get worse. And we've already seen it through three games ramp up a lot here. And I mean, if he's still in a funk by the time they get back home, like, that's going to be a pretty angry crowd, I think, at Rogers Arena. But if he's still playing like this, so I'm sympathetic to it. I am. But again, like, the only cure for it, the only thing to change it is for him to go out and be an elite player.
Well, and last night, anyway, like in the second period, right? Him and DeBrusque set him up for a couple nice chances. You know, I felt like the Canucks settled down in part with that line kind of leading them into the fight. But okay, so he was fine. You know, we can't get to a point in discussing this player where, you know, he showed signs of life. He was fine. He wasn't the problem is like enough, right? Like this guy,
difference maker.
You know, 25 years old. He's been a point per game player for 400 plus games in his NHL career. The list of guys who accomplish that at this age, who score this much, that young for this long, like it's a who's who of Hall of Famers or fringe Hall of Famers at the very, like, the worst players on that list. We did the exercise yesterday on Canucks Talk. Is Spezza and Pierre Turgeon. You know, like, come on. Like, we can't lower the bar around this guy just because it's been a lengthy struggle. But, you know, I was texting with Jeff Patterson today, who pointed out to me that it's been 34 games since Patterson last scored a 5-on-5 goal in a Canucks uniform. I mean,
that's wild. Like,
that's inexplicable given how productive and dangerous and effective this guy's been for, you know, the vast majority of his NHL career.
Absolutely. He's got to be a difference maker. And in this market where you have a really intelligent hockey fan base, they know you cannot cheat on effort in this city. You cannot cheat. You can't get away with underperforming on a big contract in this market. You can't. This isn't Columbus or Carolina, and he knows that. I mean, he could fly under the radar in Columbus and Carolina and put up these numbers you just talked about, Thomas. But to do that in Vancouver and any other Canadian market is not going to happen.
You guys had that great conversation yesterday. I happened to be listening at that time. And I think it was you, Jamie, who made the point that, you know, historically, all these players come through.
Yep.
You know, if there is a slump, they come through after a certain amount of time. But you made the point, you know, to Thomas, which was great. If there's one team that there could be an exception for, it would be the Canucks. I mean, I hate to say it, but, like, you know, we're so defeatist here, and I get that, but I kind of agree that, like, if it could happen to anybody, it could happen to the Vancouver Canucks.
And it's just so odd because, I mean, we've all seen even really good players go through slumps, right? And, hey, maybe 15 games, and, they've only got a handful of points, and it just doesn't look right. But so often in those moments, it's like, hey, they're just not getting the bounces, right? Oh, hey, he had 6 shots on goal last night, but the goalie robbed him, and that's why he's in a slump. And, you know, okay, if he just keeps doing those things, it's going to turn around. That's what makes this one so baffling. One, how long it's been, the fact that it's stretching over 2 seasons now, and the fact that it's not even, you can't even look at it and say, like, oh, he's just getting unlucky. It's just the performance is completely evaporated. And I'll be honest, like, I don't really know what to make of it. You know what I mean? I know people text in, like, he's a bum, trade him. But, like, I have no idea. I have no idea what to make of this at this point.
People aren't trading for him right now.
How are you going to trade him, Jamie? How would you trade him?
But people want some fire. Like,
Easily, by the way.
Drive the net. Like, just try to do something. Like, you know, drive the net. Take a shot. You know, pass up the pass. Take a shot. Like, people would like to see something like that. Now, I interrupted you there, Thomas.
I interrupted you. Don't worry about it. No, I was just saying.
But you said they could trade him easily.
Explain that one to me, Thomas.
You don't think Pedersen has value? Like, he represents the hardest.
So the whole city
at 11-6.
Yes,
Thomas. The whole city of Vancouver's down his throat right now because he's underperforming on a massive contract, and you think somehow 31 teams are going to be interested in that guy?
Yes, without unreservedly. Wow. Yes. Are you like?
Wow. So
are you kidding?
In Vancouver.
You go.
Everyone in Vancouver thinks he's junk, but Thomas is going to trade junk.
Well, but it's luckily, not, luckily it's not the people in Vancouver that count in the conversation, though, in this one, right?
Yeah, I know there's 2 million GMs in this city, but the 31 gentlemen who actually have the jobs, you know, there's nothing those guys want more than a 25-year-old center who's been point per game from the ages of 19 through 25. Like, everyone is going to gamble
at 11.6,
but... On everyone in the league is going to jump at gambling on a player like that. Every single team.
And they would, Thomas. And they would, because right now, what would you get from him? Right? Right? Like the Canucks, what could they possibly demand from him at this point?
The fact is,
like,
is that these...
I mean, something decent, but not like it would be a year ago.
But think about it this way. Jack Eichel had a back surgery that no NHL player had ever had. Was at open war with the Buffalo Sabres franchise that had gone on for 18 months, right? Hadn't played in 10 months at the time he was traded, and he, you know, netted the Buffalo Sabres like a first Alex Tuch, Peyton Krebs plus. Like, you know, do not confuse Pettersson's struggles with sort of an idea that every team in the league wouldn't be lining up to have this problem of, oh man, our elite superstar center, who we know is that and who has been that consistently, has really struggled for 40 games. Like, that's
but
still
right
a
now,
champagne problem.
But right now, but he's been struggling for what now, 50 games, Thomas?
Sure. I mean,
between 40, 50, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, so
it's
there's
been
injury
a while.
Issues there, tendonitis. But the
Eichel neck injury is a good... Yeah. Is a,
like,
is,
these guys
so good. I'm gonna
hold
I'm
value.
Down
well, and also, I think
tomorrow.
The other thing with Eichel, right, was I think we all remember the reputation he had, right? Like, oh, can you win with this guy? Look, what's he done for Buffalo? And then he goes to Vegas and he wins the Cup. And he's a beast for them. And now you look at it as like, oh, they've got this stud down the middle,
right?
Yeah,
it seems obvious in retrospect. But the point is like... If a player like this struggles, maybe they become available. That's the only... These guys are never available when things are good. They only become available when things go horribly, horribly wrong, right? And every team in the league is on the lookout for those opportunities because they're the opportunities, the big swings that win teams' cups. So make no mistake, Pettersson has struggled, but this is not like a bad contract that the club couldn't move. This is a... player with a long track record of being exceptional, who at the moment anyway is decidedly not performing at an exceptional level.
So we're three games in and we're having the how could they trade Pettersson conversation. That tells you everything you need to know about how this season is going so far.
So I guess the answer to the is it time to panic question
is yes. Apparently it is. It is time to panic based on this
now
conversation.
Now eat your miniature fruits and vegetables, kids.
Hold on. Before we're done, I mean, Eric Brandstrom coming up, it sounds like. I know Irf reporting that. Is it reflected on the media site already? He's on the roster?
Not on the media site yet.
They sent Ratu down.
I've heard the same thing. I went to Twitter to try and report it, but Irf already had it, so I just retweeted
there
him.
There you go. All right, good for you. Yeah. So anyways, Eric Brandstrom's coming up. Are you like? It seems a little early. I mean, as we talk about, is it time to panic? How concerned should we be? I know you reported, Drance, that when they acquired Brandstrom in the Tucker Poolman deal, it was really more of a throw-in to make the money work. It wasn't necessarily because they had him in their immediate plans. But again, now three games in, and I guess it just speaks to how glaring the puck moving issues on the back end have been. But I know I was a little surprised, anyways, to see Brandstrom coming up so soon into the season here.
Yeah, and a lefty that can apparently play the right side. Yeah. I know, Rick, you've talked to some people today that can play the right side. And you look at a couple of the goals last night, Myers on the second goal, and then Juleson. We're talking about guys on the right side, Juleson blowing a tire on the first goal. So they feel there's some issues. Or maybe they're going to use Brandstrom alongside DeBrusque up front.
So Rick,
it's a joke here. Work.
I know. But I did talk to Brandstrom.
Not even these guys are laughing.
No, not even these guys. They're hard crack here. But I talked to Brandstrom's agent this morning. He did say he can play the right side and has played the right side. So we just don't know if he's being brought up for the left side or the right side. And that's going to be a big question. He had 3 points for Abbotsford and Calgary over the weekend. Desharnais's been a healthy scratch the last two games. And you know what, guys? I would take Zadorov and Ian Cole right now in the third pair. I really would. They made an offer to Ian Cole at $1.5 million. They asked him to take a 50% pay cut. That was early after they were eliminated. And Ian Cole's agent said, no, I want the same money as last year.
Or maybe just one of those guys,
yeah,
at the very least.
Yeah, I would take both of them, Don. I know,
but at the very least.
But
yeah.
I would even take Ian Cole right now. Remember JT Miller last year said, when Ian Cole talks in the dressing room, we listen. You know, that's a guy... A warrior with over 1,000 games. He's won Stanley Cups. But they offered a 50% pay cut. Then they went after Cole again at the NHL draft. They called his agent up again. I don't know if they made another offer that had more money, but they did go after him again. So they went after him twice. I just don't know that second offer. But the fact they gave Desharnais $2 million tells me that that's possibly they went up from 1.5 to 2 on Ian Cole. But boy, that third pair, you know, are you going to be at the deadline looking for someone in the right pair? I don't know. But right now, they got to get Desharnais back. They got to get him playing, or this contract's going to look pretty damn bad.
And I think that's one of the stories that hasn't got enough attention early on. Again, just three games, but the newcomers, and you touched on that a bit, but Desharnais, scratched. Sprong, scratched. Have we noticed Danton Heinen enough? All due respect to the kid from Langley in DeBrusk hasn't scored a goal. So that's one of the stories that's being overshadowed by what's happening with Pettersson.
I think one of the things about that happened with Brännström is he went down to Abbotsford, and I think the team wanted... Sorry,
Have you been eating
hot dogs?
He was crushing some plantains.
My problem is my plantains were normal-sized.
Bananas.
So he went down to the American League, and it was very clear in his two Abbotsford Canucks games that this guy could do whatever he wanted on the ice, right? Like, he is legitimately at that level where he's simply too good for the American League. Now, you know, there are some maddening decision-making things that he will do on occasion, which I know the club was worried about when they traded for him. You know, it's, I think, one of the reasons why the club wasn't super worried about losing him on waivers necessarily, but... You know, I think it's a pretty honest reaction, which is that if this team wants to play the way they want to play up front, they're going to need better outlets on the back end. And I get the sense, we'll let you gentlemen go, because I know Rick's needs to find his car. But the sense I get a little bit watching this team play is almost that it's like two competing thoughts. Right, it's like this blue line with all this size that's built to play the controlled, cautious puck possession game that the Canucks relied on last year, and this forward group that's sort of built to get up and go and attack off the rush, and I just don't see it fitting together just yet. Which isn't to say that they won't figure it out. We've seen Rick Tocchet figure a lot out during his year and a half in Vancouver, but I don't know that they have figured out how to make those sort of disparate pieces fit together. And I wonder if Brännström can kind of help connect that maybe a little bit.
Just before we let you guys go here, I mentioned Donnie being the BC Sports Hall of Famer a little earlier. The BC Sports Hall of Fame announcing their inductees for next year, the class of 2025 here. And you've got some very impressive company joining you. Christine Sinclair.
Whoa.
Feels like a no-brainer to me for her to go in. Jim Hewson in the media category, very, very well-deserved. Yep. And I want to give a shout-out as well to our Sportsnet colleague, contributor here. I know he's on your show as well. Ray Ferraro going in. Yep. To the BC Hall of Fame. So congratulations to those three, especially Ray and the whole class going in next year.
Those three all are in the same category for me, and not only as BC Sports Hall of Famers, but they all like plantains. But also I can't believe the three of them aren't in there already.
Yeah, that's
for sure. Truly. Again, three absolute no-brainers there. Now, there's other nominees as well. I haven't got a chance to go through the whole list yet. I don't want to say if that's the whole class. But again, shout out to them. Shout out to everyone going in. And as you said, no-brainers to be inducted. All right. Thanks for doing this, guys.
Well, big time. Hopefully
by the time we chat next, the Canucks have won a game. Fingers crossed, so we can have a bit of a different conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
They better
absolutely.
Have.
Big ask.
Have a nice day.
You too, guys. Nice. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon.
It occurs to me that I'll be traveling back from Chicago on Wednesday next week, so
we might have to shift it.
We might have to shift it a day or so. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
We will figure it out. That was a good one. The inbox had a lot of reaction to the
Small fruits?
No, the trading PD conversation.
How did we even get there? Oh, right. I just insisted that he'd hold value. That's it. Like, it was
I think I referenced it first, actually. I don't know.
So it was your fault.
It was my fault, because then in response to me, they were like, trade him for what? How could you trade him? And I was like, well, I didn't say they should trade him. I just threw out the high possibility.
And they were also suggesting that he wouldn't have value.
Yeah.
And I just thought the Jack Eichel comp was a good one to keep in mind, because no matter how bad it is with Pettersson, like, the conversation around Eichel was wild at the time. And by the way, it was very obvious that every team should be going for it.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We got lots more to get into. We can dive into the inbox. We can talk a little bit about the Eric Brandstrom call-up as well. Again, Jason Buchla is going to join us at 1 o'clock. But we got an open segment up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. We're vibing, we're grooving to the Rejoiner music here in the studio. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. So the Canucks did practice today, I believe, down in Florida. I don't know if there was any traveling media in attendance, so don't have a lines update or anything like that for you. We'll see if there's any commentary from Rick Tocchet. I think it would pretty much just be the Canucks' own reporter traveling with the team at this point, or at least at this practice, so we'll see.
Yeah, and I don't think the team likes lineup news out, given that the team reporters don't tweet them, right? Mm-hmm. So I assume that the club, has a view of how the team should be covered, and part of it involves permitting, Tocchet and company to put a shroud of secrecy over exactly how they're practicing and what exactly their lineup looks like. So we'll see. I'll be on the road by Friday.
Yes.
So I'll be off the show on Friday. Some housekeeping for our regular listeners. I'll be out on Friday traveling to Philadelphia, and then anytime the club is at morning skater practices, we'll start to have lines from then on. Although we sometimes get them from Murph. He never, like,
Murph is very hit or miss.
He couches it, though. He's like, I have no idea.
And I don't think
he definitely knows.
I don't think Murph wants to, like, take on the responsibility of being the on the road lines guy. 100%. So I think he's, like, consciously not doing it all the time.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's like, I don't want this to be my job.
Yes.
So I'll do it sometimes as a treat, but not today is not one of those days where we're getting the treat from Murph. By the way, on Friday, with you off the show, Landon Ferraro is going to join me in studio for an hour of the show. So look forward to that. That'll be great to chat with Landon on
Friday. That's a huge
upgrade.
I know. Listeners, really, you're welcome. I'll travel more often.
I will say in terms of how they...
Maybe I won't.
How they... What do you expect me to beg you to stay? I'm just going to let that one slide.
No, it's more the like... It's more the like, don't give up the mic.
Yeah. Yesterday on the show, I posed the question of, okay, we're seeing all these top six tweaks and it hasn't really got going yet. You know, obviously we know the discussion with Pettersson, even Miller hasn't necessarily looked at his best. And I said, you know, how long before you bump Garland and Hoglander into the top six? And even beyond that, how long before you try Elias Pettersson between Hoglander and Garland and Jake DeBrusk up with JT Miller and Brock Besser? And it turned out the answer to that was about 40 minutes of hockey, 40 minutes of substandard hockey, because that's the configuration we saw from Rick Tocchet in the third period. And look, I mean, from the day Jake DeBrusk was signed, right, and we knew it was, okay, we're going to try him with Elias Pettersson, that's what we want. But we also all imagined what a great fit he could be with JT Miller. And then, again, Connor Garland has, I think, pretty clearly been their best forward to start the season. He's playing a ton of minutes. And, you know, I think the interesting thing about trying Garland with Pettersson, we had Yannick Hansen on yesterday, and he kind of said, you know, I don't like that because Garland works when he is the play driver, the playmaker, the guy carrying the puck, doing most of the work on a line, and obviously you want Elias Pettersson and JT Miller doing that on their respective lines, but Elias Pettersson isn't that version of that player. He's not that player right now, right? He's not that version of himself where he is this puck dominant, creative, play driving guy. So I actually don't think you are really duplicating that element of their games right now by moving Garland up next to Elias Pettersson. And, you know, this isn't a conversation of, okay, you got to put Connor Garland there to get Elias Pettersson going. It's just, you need your top players at the top of your lineup. And right now, Connor Garland is one of their top players, if not their top forward, based on how he's playing. So I think it's absolutely worth trying at this point. And yeah, in a perfect world, would Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland be on separate lines because they can both drive play and be those creative engines for a line? Yes, but one of them is not that right now. So you may as well move the guy who is an engine up into your lineup and get him more opportunities.
I also just like disagree with Yannick, right? Like, I think Connor Garland, I don't think we've seen enough Connor Garland playing up the lineup to really have a good sense of it. I mean, since he's been in Vancouver, he has super consistently been, you know, deployed in middle 6 minutes. Now, Garland typically earns trust from coaches. Boudreau maybe had slightly less mileage than Tocchet and Travis Green did. But, you know, his stints in the top six have been pretty short, typically speaking. The playoffs was sort of one of the first times we'd seen it in a long time, like almost since Travis Green's last 25 games, where we saw a lot of like Garland with Horvat. And, you know, it worked. Like, that line was pretty good in the playoffs. They didn't control play all that well. I think there was, you know, some fit things that weren't perfect with Garland and Lindholm in particular. I think the righty-righty thing, like, I think you want Garland to play with a lefty center if at all possible. But they were still productive. Like, they still scored goals. That was arguably Vancouver's most dangerous offensive line 5-on-5 throughout the run to the second round. So, you know, I really think Connor Garland's a high-end forward. And I really think he's been pigeonholed because of his size into a smaller minutes role for too long. Now, I don't know this, right? Like, I don't know for sure. That's just my eval on a player that I think does a lot of good things and competes really hard and is pretty creative offensively. And by the way, despite it feeling like a lot of his chances don't find the back of the net, also scores at a very auspicious rate. I mean, I've brought this up before, but the gap in 5-on-5 goal scoring between Garland and JT Miller since Garland joined the Vancouver Canucks, because he scored at 5-on-5 yesterday, right?
That was a power play goal.
It was a power play goal. Okay. So it's one. It's one 5-on-5 goal difference between JT Miller and Connor Garland since Garland joined the Canucks. I mean, the fact is that the goals are even there for him. So, yeah, I definitely want to see what that looks like in a larger role. And honestly, I just think at this point, if where the Canucks are, where their top two centermen aren't really delivering the mustard, right? Like, aren't driving this team to wins consistently.
Neither guy, and I don't want this to be like, you're criticizing JT Miller to distract from Elias Pettersson or whatever, right? Pettersson's in a different category.
Are people saying that?
Yes, that comes up. Pettersson's in a different category.
Well, it's not criticizing anyone to distract from anyone else.
In the first three games, neither guy is really driving play, right? I know Miller had the big noticeable effort and the clutch goal and everything in game one, but the consistent creating opportunities, driving play, neither guy is really doing it at the moment. I would say the only two players that the Canucks have who are driving play, Quinn Hughes and Connor Garland, right? And they obviously need both JT Miller and Elias Pettersson to get into that category pretty soon here.
Yeah, they do. I mean, for sure they do. Look, the Canucks have been outshot 12-18 with Pettersson on the ice and have outshot their opponents 16-14 with JT Miller on the ice. Combined, the Canucks top six, two goals against across three games. You know, I think it's clear that Miller's playing at a higher level, for sure. But, you know, not a high enough level that he's been the difference in these games.
Nope.
Like, period. And that's it's an impossibly high standard with which you need to hold a team's best players to, right? Like, they need to be the reason you win, especially when that was the logic of this team, right? Like, this core group is going to be good enough to carry them, and the support pieces that this club has brought in and the stylistic sort of fit, how it all fits together, should be enough to like make sure you're not giving it all back, which was a problem for years. Because in truth, even when this team wasn't very good, their core group was good enough to win you games most nights.
Yep.
It's just that so much of it got given back by what the bottom six looked like, what the defense looked like. You know, and I guess that's kind of what it feels like a little bit when we're talking about the puck moving on the back end through these three games, right? Is there's genuine concern that maybe this team doesn't have that, like, because this team arguably didn't have it last year either, but they were able to hop over that baseline, right? Like, they hopped over that baseline level. Anyway, to come back and stay focused on Miller-Pettersson, like, I just think at some point, you got to try to see what it looks like. And by the way, we saw it with Tampa. Tampa just has their six best players in the top six.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, at some point, you want to just see, like, what does it look like if you put this team's six most consistent, dynamic forwards together on two lines? Like, what does that look like? Because so far, you know, it's been Heinen, it's been Baines, it's been Sprong. I mean, they're plugging holes in their top six in order to keep this Garland Hoglander nexus together, and whether they're together with Pettersson or whether they're separate, and it's, you know, Hoglander with Besser and Miller, or and DeBrusque with Pettersson and Garland. I mean, whatever formation you want to try it in, like, I just want to see those six guys play together at the moment. I think this team needs it. I think the top six needs it.
Yeah, well, they clearly need it, right? And it's an interesting, because your point about the puck moving last year, at least jumping over the baseline, and it not doing so far this year, is an interesting one. I also think, I mean, the team is just, like, the word that comes to mind for me watching this team so far is sloppy, right? Like, it's like the puck moving has been a problem, but they're also, they haven't been sharp in the offensive zone. They haven't been sharp through the neutral zone, right? They just haven't really been consistently sharp through any phase of the game. Now, pinpointing the puck moving, I think, as job number one or one of the top priorities to solve, I think is very fair. And that brings us back to,
well, it cost them on the first goal, right? Like, yeah, the first goal of the game. Now, Noah Juulsen's a really interesting player for me in some ways. We talk a lot about that line between an NHL player, right, and an AHL player, mm-hmm, that can give you some games. Now, I thought last year that Juulsen had sort of arrived as the NHL player, right? Like, I thought he'd gotten to a point where you could count on him as an everyday guy. And I thought his penalty killing, the physicality, the fact that he's sort of got, like, sneaky, reliable wheels, especially, you know, carrying the puck through the neutral zone, like, he's got some game in those areas that interested me, that I thought played up. Now, he played a lot of games for this Canucks team last season, like 50-plus games, and I thought played really well within that. But I do think we're coming up against maybe a limit, you know what I mean? Where maybe he's an NHL defenseman, but not an everyday guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does feel like when he gets out there against, and we saw this in the playoffs, he's good. Like, he's good. If you're at home and you can protect him matchup-wise, he does so many things that I like. The penalty killing, the big hits, physical defense in zone, like, that stuff works. The problem is there's, like, 25 players in the world that seem to consistently be able to get to him.
Mm.
And by the way, like, fair enough, right? Like, this is a brutal league. Like, you know, having a tough giveaway and then not being able to get back against Nikita Kucherov, like, welcome to the NHL. That's happened to 1,000 other NHL defensemen of varying qualities over the course of time. But, you know, you think about when he was out of position for the hit on the McDavid goal in that playoff game, or the Philip Forsberg down low, right, where he just decisively loses that battle to Philip Forsberg. It's not happening against second line guys.
Yeah.
It's not like Philip Novak is like, or sorry,
Tommy Novak
is like, you know, spinning him into the ground or putting him into the dirt. These are the best players on the planet. But in those moments where he is out there against tough competition, you know, you notice it, right? Like, you're like, and I think it's happened frequently enough that we shouldn't ignore that it's, you know, a thing. And so if that's the case, then you're a guy who, you know, can give a team really good third pair minutes and really good penalty killing minutes, like, at home, but not on the road. So that's where it's like, you're an NHL player, but maybe you're not an everyday NHL player, right? He needs to start being able to, you know, have some, like, less of those loud mistakes when he finds himself out there against top competition. Mm-hmm. I guess that's, like, the final hurdle for him to get to the point where, you know, I'm back to being like, okay, I'm open to the idea that this guy's an everyday NHL level defender.
I also wonder if there's a bit of a dynamic looking at Juleson last year to this year so far, in a very, very small sample size, literally only two games, right? But that idea of the baseline of the puck moving declining, right? Whereas last year when he was in the lineup, there was still one of, you know, Zadorov or Cole in the lineup with him, right? So he was the obvious kind of, you know, like the least effective puck mover in their lineup, but you had other guys who could do things. And I wonder if he gets a little bit more exposed when the overall level of the puck moving ability on the blue line goes down a little bit as well. Plus, I think, you know, the Canucks obviously are trying to shift their identity, and maybe Noah Juleson is not as much of a fit for the identity they're trying to build, and certainly not while they're in the process of building it, than he was for the identity they had as a team last year.
Which brings me back to the like two scattered thoughts point, right? Because that's something that I just can't help but think about when I watch this Canucks team play. And by the way, this is going to be true whether or not they figure it out, right? Like whether or not this team wins the remainder of their games on the road trip or not, I'm going to be thinking about this or sort of watching for it. So this isn't even like a results-based take by any means. This is purely a, you know, just a like team construction thought where this Canucks team clearly was thoughtful and intentional about how they went about sort of trying to level up, to use a favorite word of mine, their ability to attack, their ability to generate scoring chances, and specifically scoring chances off the rush in reaction to sort of what happened with the offensive letdown in the latter stages of that series against the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, in so doing, the moves were up front. The moves were on the wing. And it wasn't even necessarily plan A. It was something that sort of the team ultimately pivoted to after Lindholm was priced out, right? After they were priced out on Lindholm in terms of, you know, his free agent price. And I'm sort of left to wonder with not just the countervailing sort of, but like, because of what this team was able to do defensively, right? Because of the fact that, like, Tyler Myers struggled in the first 2 months of the season, and then they were able to get the best out of him down the stretch, right? Did this team miss? Now, this isn't something I have an opinion on, by the way. This is a question I'm just curious about. Did this team miss in some ways on, like, the necessity of having sharper puck moving D-men, in part because they believed almost too much in the systemic success that they had last season with immobile D? Like, is there an element to which this team maybe bought their own headlines from a roster construction standpoint? What do you think?
How much stock did they put in the Rick Tocchet system, right? I think a lot. Understandably so. Yeah, very, I mean, understandably so.
So did we as analysts, right?
Absolutely, right? But I guess you get to a certain point where the limits of it start to be tested, right? And that's when you start to lose a bit of the puck moving. It's like, uh-oh, we thought we could get away with this, but maybe we've crossed a threshold here and we can't.
Or especially, it becomes a thing when you try to open it up, when you're not as compact, right? Like, the seams show only when you start to be a team that's attempting to go, right? And not moving as a group in that sort of compact, organized, restrained way that was such a, you know, a baseline reason for what this team was able to accomplish last season.
You can support the Canucks Autism Network program through the online auction. Go to canproam.ca to bid on Canucks tickets, signed memorabilia, local getaways, and much more. Limited tickets are now available for the Can Pro-Am luncheon on November 1st, featuring a hot stove panel including Eddie Lack and Ryan Kessler and other Canucks alumni. For tickets and info, visit canproam.ca/luncheon. Jason Buchla on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk, of course, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. kintechsports.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Bukla going to join us momentarily here. We'll get his thoughts on the Canucks' winless start.
I just want to bring something up. Nolan in the inbox texts, just my opinion, but they wanted to get faster. But in the three games we have seen, they look like they're on slow mode while the other teams are in normal play. And there's a distinction that I think matters between being fast and playing fast, right? Like, you can play fast without speed. You need team speed, but an individual player can play fast without being a burner necessarily. Like, I think that's one of the things, like JT Miller, more quick than fast, right? Plays fast because he's so north-south, right? I mean, the Canucks released this video, like, who has the best deeks on the team or whatever, and Miller's joke was like, I never deek. Like, I have no idea what you mean.
Just go right through, guys.
Straight lines, baby. Or as Tanner Pearson once described playing with Miller and Besser, described their style of play as smart, stupid hockey, right? And, you know, there's like a discussion going on, we'll get Book's thoughts on this too, right now about Lane Hutson, point per game. Lane Hutson does not play fast, even though he moves pretty well. It's sort of about team-level decision-making with the puck. Let's bring Books on, because I know he's here.
Absolutely. Now joining us from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, and Director of Amateur Scouting, it was?
Director of Amateur Scouting.
I don't want to, make light of his title. So yeah. Director of Amateur Scouting, formerly in the NHL, our guy, Jason Bukla. Books, what's going on, man?
Hey, fellas. How's it going?
Still waiting for a Canucks win. We're three games in now, and I think after the first two overtime losses, it was very easy to do that. It's early. Don't worry. They picked up points. And look, it's still very early, but some of that concern definitely starting to creep in here, I think, around the Canucks. And, you know, I understand that you've been spending your day or part of your day anyways kind of breaking down some of the tape from last night's loss. So, I mean, what stood out to you about the 4-1 loss against the Lightning for the Canucks last night?
Quite a bit, to be honest with you. I mean, where you got? How much time do we have, folks? I mean,
we got a lot. Like,
yeah, if you want to wait around, we'll do a full hour, bud.
Yeah, like, you know, I got no problem with that. I love being with you guys. It's great. Well, time flies. The first thing that stands out is the fact that Tampa Bay's top line. The first thing that stood out overall was. Tampa Bay is an opponent out of the box this year compared to Tampa Bay in the past. I thought that they played much quicker, faster as an entire team. But the top of the lineup, Braden Point's line specifically, they gave the Canucks fits. And they had a really hard time matching up anybody against that line. It seemed like Point's line possessed the puck for, long periods of time every time they hit the ice. But the chaos in their own zone defensively at times was alarming to me for Vancouver. I have to be honest. I mean, how many times did I see Soucy and Myers on the wrong side of their check or not containing at least the stick at the very least? But, when plays were kind of spilling out of off the wall or off the cycle and somebody was going net front for a drive, just their spatial awareness and their ability to get to defend the house was way off. I really didn't like how they didn't start on time. That bothered me a lot. I know it's Tampa Bay's home opener and they're going to be motivated to play, but the Canucks were down 6-1 and the shots on goal and really gave up some grade A chances in the first 5 minutes. And I've read some spots today where Seelovs isn't giving them the saves that they need in relation to the rest of the league and expected goals against and stuff like that. I would argue that that game might have been out of hand at certain stages last night, if not for his acrobatic prowess. So, I haven't even got to Patterson yet, and I'm sure we're going to talk about him.
Because he's
chasing it, guys. Like it's like he's got no feel for what the hell's going on, and it's obvious to me, and it's bothering me a great deal out of the box here.
So I agree with you on Shelovs because that first period could have been 3-0, 4-0 really quickly. And what I really don't like seeing from a team ever, like one of the things that is most likely to cause me to sort of you know, pull out my scalpel and begin to carve Books is when you get outcompeted as clearly as the Canucks did. I thought, you know, you mentioned the point line and the Kucherov line, and obviously they fed the Canucks all evening, but that Hagel, Paul, Cirelli line, just hound dogs. Yeah. I mean, they came out like gorillas. There was no match for that work ethic from the Canucks in the first 20.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because Nick Paul, he's not a burner. He's a big body, but he's not a burner. Mm-hmm. It seemed like every time he had the puck on his stick that either they couldn't get it off of him or he was protecting it and making plays. Like, to me, he's a guy that if you pounce on him quickly enough and your stick is active enough at the very least where you don't have to body up necessarily, that you should be able to, you know, create some turnovers, create some strips, or at the very least, you know, he's going to be reaching for something because you're going to get there a little bit quicker. And I agree with that too. Like, you know, that line, you know, him specifically, I felt like he had it on his stick quite a bit. You know, Anthony Cirelli he's a predator, right? Like, he hunts. he finds pucks at opportune times, and you know, he does a variety of things for Tampa Bay, and he did it well last night. I just felt like Vancouver, you know, they live on the margins a little bit. All NHL teams do. Like, the truth be known, like, it's so slim. Like, you can't make errors in the National Hockey League. You always live on the margins. The really good teams obviously do it less, and they win out more. And the Canucks had a fantastic puck luck last year, and everything seemed to go right for them. But, you know, there are going to be times, ebbs and flows in the year, you're going to be living on the margins. Yesterday's margins, the Canucks didn't win enough of them, didn't deserve to win enough of them. And honestly, they were just between the ears. They looked lost at times, especially defensively. And there's no excuse for that week one into the season. They should have been better.
Well, and I think, you know, the point about living on the margins, and obviously last year we know about the shooting percentage and the great goaltending and all of that, but also, I mean, how many times did they get clearly outworked last year, right? I think, like, they were one of the hardest working teams in the league last season. You made the point about the sloppiness in the defensive zone. Obviously, being really solid in the defensive zone was a calling card for them last season. So it's one thing to live on the margins when you are really taking care of business in your end and you're working hard consistently. You're almost always the hardest working team on the ice. But if you don't have those kind of foundational pieces of effort and defensive responsibility, and you're living on the margins, like, things are going to go against you, you know, fairly regularly in the NHL.
100% agree with that. I mean, the identity of the Canucks is pretty easy when they're going, easy to identify when they're going the way that they were going last year. And that's what the coach expects. There's a culture there. We've talked about this ad nauseum. And, you know, so when it's not going well, my first expectation is if things aren't necessarily going well structure-wise, let's at least protect the house and dummy down a road game. You know what I mean? Like, let's just not, let's not chase the game in all three zones. Let's take advantage of a turnover. Let's wear them down when we get a chance, maybe off the cycle or, you know, pouncing on different things around the ice. But let's not get chaotic in all three zones. And when they tracked back last night, like, even on the Juleson giveaway, okay, like, he blows a tire, but if you watch the clip very closely, nobody knows where to go after that. Like there's four white shirts kind of chasing the play. They have no idea what the hell is going on. And then in the second period, or the one goal there, the point scores from the right circle, again, the play materializes, it comes off the half wall, and, you know, two Canucks, I think it was Myers and Sherwood, go just inside the – they have nobody. Like, they literally are covering nobody. So what I'm saying is that when things get like that, you know, slow down, take stock of your surrounding, defend the house, and then outwork your opponents at what you can do off the puck. They do that. And they just lost in translation. So to your point, the margins go out the window when you're playing that way, when you don't have the structure with every team. Never mind Vancouver, who's a good team. They're going to be fine. But they didn't look like the same sort of team that was even close to ending last season the way they played last night.
With where the Canucks are at, Books, one thing I've been bringing up a lot over the course of this program, and I'm curious to get your two cents on, is this idea that it feels like the Canucks are built with almost competing ideas
in terms of what this lineup looks like at the moment. On defense, you know, they've stuck with that trees approach, which worked so well for them last season when they were playing this, you know, very controlled, possession-based, you know, gradual low-risk brand of hockey, reliant on, you know, second stick opportunities and tip goals and point shots as sort of the basis of their offense. And this faster, more dynamic get-up-and-go forward group that's been supplemented with DeBrusk and Heinen and Sherwood and company that wants to sort of attack off the rush with a different level of aggression. It almost feels like with the forwards sort of taking more chances with a defense that's maybe better suited to playing the way they did last season, it's almost like they're getting too spread out. Like it just doesn't quite fit yet. And I'm not saying it won't at some point, but that's how it feels. That there feels like there's almost a tension internally in terms of this lineup at the moment. What do you see there? What are your thoughts?
I think that's 100% correct, actually. And you can throw Ratu into that mix too, because he played a certain identity in preseason, which I think really suits the team and suits him. But, you know, again, you throw him into that mix, and then you even throw Baines in there, you know, with what he's projected to bring when he plays, you know, at the top of his level. So, yeah, I agree with that. I think that, you know, everybody's got to start to complement each other as five-person units and see how, you know, we can produce an identity that's the best to everybody's skill set. But you're absolutely correct there. And some things start to kind of get exposed when they start playing this way. So I would suggest to you guys that Brock Besser, when it's a track meet, he cannot be the best of himself when it gets like that. Like last year, he had a heck of a year. They played a little bit more. I'm not saying they didn't play fast, but they weren't track meet every night. You know what I mean? Like they were wear you down, compete, go to the, you know, and he's obviously, we know when Brock Besser plays his best hockey and how he has to play. But last night, when he's got to track the full 200 back and forth at full tilt all the time, you're losing his element eventually in the offensive zone because he's not capable of playing like that all the time. So when the team lacks structure and they're playing hectic, guys like Besser, they can't be the best version of themselves. And then, I mean, maybe that brings us to Pettersson too, because I didn't think Pettersson played fast, slow, or controlled. I didn't know. Like, if you walked into the building last night, it was the first time you saw Elias Pettersson play, and then you look down at what he makes, you know, money-wise and whatever else. I'm not trying to hyperbole this. I'm just trying to say that he didn't look like he was fitting into whatever style the group was playing last night, and he was fighting the puck. Like, even on the flank on the power play in the first period, you know, it's bobbling off his stick. He gets a 2-on-1 late in the first period. The team's really, you know, just kind of hanging on. And instead of making an aggressive play to the net, it's like a muffin off your backhand. Those aren't good enough, right? Like, he's better than that. And he's a guy that also suffers in situations like this.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to get to Elias Pettersson because as much as we can talk about the identity and the puck moving and all of these things, you know, all that stuff matters, but it's also kind of irrelevant unless Elias Pettersson gets a lot better in a hurry. And as you said, it just kind of looks like he's a little bit lost out there. And man, there's been so much debate and conversation here in Vancouver. Is it physical? Is it mental? What's going on? I have to think it's mental at a certain point, Books, just because, as you said, right, the unwillingness to make those aggressive plays, how tentative he looks. I'm not saying there can't be some sort of physical explanation, but it looks like he's just lost all of his confidence, all of the kind of bravado that had made him a great player in the NHL previously.
So let me put it this way. If I'm pre-scout, like if I'm a pro scout and I'm in Tampa Bay last night, I'm scouting that game. My assumption, especially early in the season right now, is that the people who are on the ice are healthy. I mean, everybody's going to get nicked up now and again, right? But my assumption is I walk in and Elias Pettersson's a healthy version of himself. There's nothing really going on. So then you're exactly right. I look at that and I start to feel like it's between the ears. You know, we're just fighting it. It's like a golfer, a putter who has a yip. You know, you're going to have to fight through it. You're going to have to figure it out. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, I think he's a heck of a player, you know, and he can be a star player at any shift, but there are times as well that his get up and go, his body language, he's always going to be like that. So I'm going to create a bias probably for his whole career. I wish sometimes when I look, especially when the camera pans him and something doesn't go right, I wish his body language was better. I wish there was a little bit more to it, you know, like a little bit more. Nylander's like that in Toronto sometimes too, right? All world one shift, laissez-faire the next. Pettersson's not really laissez-faire, but he fights it. Like, and when he fights it, the body language suffers, the execution suffers, and, you know, he is the version, like when he's really going, he's what Quinn Hughes is to the defense, Pettersson up front, you know, like Miller's different, like they have different players, but he is that kind of guy. So they need him to be the best version of himself. And he's fighting it, fellas. Like it was, for me personally, it was hard to watch last night. I was very frustrated by it. It was very, very poor execution on his part and not enough pushback.
So, Book, sort of one larger picture theory that I have about the league right now is that it's a stars league to a greater extent than it ever has been in my lifetime. And, you know, so we talk about the defense or, you know, Danton Heinen, Archdeep Baines in the top six, whatever. And like, fundamentally, I just feel like Vancouver's best players, right? JT Miller had some moments in that first game, but hasn't been at his best through the first three games. Elias Pettersson, we've already gone over it. He looks a bit lost. Quinn Hughes has been, you know, driving play, doing Quinn Hughes stuff, but he hasn't been the dynamic attacking presence he was in his Norris Trophy season, and obviously Thatcher Demko still out indefinitely. For me, I sort of wonder, like, how much is focusing on things outside of those four guys just rearranging deck chairs, whereas, like, fundamentally, Vancouver is going to go as far as their star guys take them. That's kind of the iceberg here.
No, it is. I mean, that is the way the league is, that's the way organizations are built nowadays. I mean, you don't have to look very far east. I mean, yeah. You look at Edmonton, you know, and they haven't exactly been fantastic out of the gate either. And they're only as good as, you know, their horses will take them or on any given night. You know, obviously goaltending factors into it. But there's some synergies between some of the top teams. Like, you know, the defense have to be able to make plays and execute and just keep it simple sometimes and defend. When you start talking about Hughes, who is like an offenseman, you know, like that's what he is. Let's be honest. Like he's a whirling dervish and he's an all-world talent. It's just so fun to watch this guy play hockey. It really is. But, you know, when Forbert is just okay, and when Soucy and Myers are chasing it, and then, you know, Juulsen works as hard as he can possibly work. Juulsen gives you what he can give you. He's a six, right? He's a six and a half is what he is. And that's all you can expect out of him. But how much more pressure does it put on Hughes then to drive the bus, because he's playing 27 minutes in a night. A lot of that time is matched up against top flight opponents, stars on the other team. And, you know, now we're penned in for long stretches. He can't play to the best of his ability either, like his identity. And, you know, even the goal that was disallowed in the late stages in the third period, you know, he's on the wrong side of his guy coming off the wall. You know what I mean? Like that guy, like that play should never get to the crease anyways. You don't have to be heavy hard. You have to be in the right position to make sure that the puck doesn't get to your crease. So you need Hughes, you need Pettersson, you need, you know, obviously Miller, you need all that to have success in the league. There's no doubt about it. You're not going to be able to rely, especially early in the year when you got some moving parts, deck chairs, as you call them. We're trying to figure that out still. We don't even know how to set the dining room table yet. So you need your stars to be the best of their or the best players on your team out of the gate. So far, they haven't been for Vancouver.
So with Elias Pettersson, Books, I mean, what options do the team, Rick Tocchet, his coaching staff, like what options do they really have? What buttons do they have to push? You know, we might see new line mates. We've already seen that once this year, right? With Daniel Sprong getting set, Denton Heinen going on that line. Obviously, they made the investment in Jake DeBrus to give him a new line mate. What are their options to try to get something more out of Elias Pettersson other than rolling him out there, playing him top 6 minutes and hope that he figures it out at some point?
Yeah, I don't know that there is any other option, to be honest. Like, I guess you could load up a singular line and you know, roll them out there every other for 20 minutes to try and get some spark. But the reality is that you can't play, you know, Miller, Pettersson, Besser on the same line all night together if you're going to do that. And you know, you would think that DeBrusque would complement Pettersson a little bit more. Heinen, you know, I'm not sure what we do on that line there on the one side, but one thing that does stand out for me here, and I'm hoping that when he comes back in the lineup that things kind of stabilize, I think Joshua is a big component of the group. I think that this proves it out a little bit more, even that having him in the lineup kind of stabilizes the look of the group up top. And I think that at that time, if things aren't clicking for Pettersson, you're going to start to see a little bit more creativity line mate wise. But honestly, guys, that leadership group, the best players, you just look yourself in the eyes and say, I got to be better than this. Mm-hmm. Like, I just have to be better than this. I'm one of the best players in the league when I'm going. I'm highly paid. There's an expectation here. The coach shouldn't have to light a spark. I shouldn't really have to matter. Shouldn't really matter who I play with. You should just play. And the best players in the league, they figure that out in a hurry. Sidney Crosby doesn't. People go to Pittsburgh to be better because they play with Sidney Crosby. It doesn't matter who plays with Sidney Crosby. Like, he's always going to be who he has been historically in the league. So just figure it out, buddy. That's what, you know, like, just I'm not going to lay any more pressure on you than you already probably don't already feel. But you have to be better. That's just the facts.
Just before we let you go, Books, I wanted to ask you as well about the Canucks. It sounds like they're going to be calling Eric Brandstrom up from the AHL. And a little bit of a surprise, right? When they made that deal, it didn't sound like he was in their immediate plans in the immediate future here. But, you know, we've seen the issues with the puck moving so far through three games from the Canucks. So Brandstrom, we'll see if he gets in against Florida or maybe against Philly. But at least he's going to come up and join the team. I mean, What are reasonable expectations if he's plugged into a third pairing role here with the Canucks?
Defensively, it's going to be a battle, you know, especially going into Florida where they play that style. If he does get a game in Florida there, like against the Panthers, even Philly, you know, Philly, when you get into Philly playing at home, you know how they're going to play. They're going to play that way as well for Tortorella. So transitional D, undersized, very limited pushback physically. So his recoveries have got to be on time to do a better job of all the things I'm talking about tonight, like just defend the house, be in front of it. Don't be staring at the numbers coming off the half wall, because when he gets like that, it's not going to be an upgrade, guys. It's going to be more of the same defensively. He's not a defensive guy, or he's not a guy you can count on for big minutes defensively. He's going to be challenged. I'm not going to lie. He's a 6 or a 7. I obviously thought he could be a PP2 power play quarterback at one stage. I'm not so sure that he can defend over an 82 game schedule. Obviously he can't so far in his career. And, we'll see. It's a little bit of a reach, I guess, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. Books, really appreciate it, man. Hopefully by the time we have you on next week, we'll have some more good news stuff to talk about with the Canucks, and the tape that you're breaking down won't be quite so hard to watch as it was after last night.
I'm open. Yeah. Hey, Tom Wilander, power play quarterback, BU to start the year, fellas.
There you go.
He replaced Hudson on PP1?
He's on PP1 up top. Distributor more than shooter, as you guys know, but he looks comfortable playing fast. I wish they'd play him more. He's at about 18 minutes over the first two nights, and he can easily play 22, so I'm monitoring it.
Sounds good. I was a little concerned. Some of what I saw in the first game, I was a little bit concerned. There were some sequences where what I really want to see from a D is make the first pass to the forward and then bust up, right? Be arrive late, where he'd like carry instead. And I always think that makes a team slower, no matter how dynamic you are moving your feet. And we all know what he can do. So there were a few sequences like that, but I didn't catch his second game. Glad to hear that he's getting a big offensive opportunity there, Books.
Yeah, he's getting it, but that's a good point. That's, you know, guys with legs, if you move it to open space and join it, when you're coming off the puck, that's where you get a lot more open space, don't you? So something to definitely monitor. And Dranser, the hockey scout, I love it. This is fantastic.
We'll get you talking about, the fat part of the bell curve or whatever it is Dranser normally says. You guys can switch roles. All right, thanks for doing this, Books. We'll talk next week.
All right, boys. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, buddy.
That is Jason Buchla, part of Sportsnet's NHL coverage and former director of amateur scouting in the NHL as well, with fantastic insight, as he always brings to the show. Yeah, I thought that was like a big moment for Books, that he was really, I mean, we know he's one of the best friends of the show, but for you to feel comfortable enough playing the walk-off music.
Yeah, that
for Books, I was surprised.
That's how you know he's arrived.
That's how you know he's like really part of the family, is when you're comfortable to do that. All right, final segment coming up. We'll do the whiteboard here to wrap things up on a Wednesday. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.